My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to another edition of Inside United. My guest today is Denise McLean from the United Kingdom. We're very happy to make your acquaintance. Welcome to Inside United.
Thank you for inviting me, Vic.
Denise works at the British Isles office of the church and has been for the past 5 years.
That's right.
And she has quite an impressive list of qualifications. She speaks French, Italian, and German.
Oui, c'est ça.
She's has a certificate in teaching English as a foreign language. Maybe she can talk about this first here, because she's made a point of it, the Windrush generation. And I would like to hear about what it is, because I've seen it on the news. I watch Sky News from time to time. They talk about the Windrush generation.
Yeah, I'm not really a Windrush person. I'll just tell the audience, my parents are from the island of Barbados in the Caribbean, and I was born in London in the United Kingdom. But Barbados was one of many Caribbean islands which were colonies of Britain. Mm-hmm. In fact, they colonized most of the Caribbean islands. And in the 1950s, even the late 40s, actually, Britain sort of sent out a come and help us plea to a lot of Caribbean people to come over to England to help rebuild it after it being bombed out after the war, World War II.
So to come from the Caribbean?
That's right.
To the United Kingdom.
To actually come, leave your homes, leave your Caribbean islands, and come and help us to rebuild Britain.
Permanently, or were they to go back?
I think there were a couple of things. I don't think they envisaged so many people would try to come over, and I don't think they thought that they were going to stay for as long as they did, like 50, 60, 70 years.
Well, a lifetime.
Put it this way, my mum came from Barbados to England when she was 19 years old. So she's now in her early 80s. Mm-hmm. So she spent all of her life practically in Britain, as opposed to in her home country, mm-hmm, of Barbados.
And that's where, and you were born in?
I was born, my parents actually met in London.
Oh, uh-huh.
They met in London, and my mum came over quite early. The reason she came over quite early is because she wanted to train as a nurse, and Britain was looking for a lot of nurses to help man the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came to London to start working in hospitals, and then that's where she met my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad always told me that when he came to England and he saw the money was so great, he said, oh, I'll only be here for a couple of years and then I'll go back to Barbados. And it never happened.
Never happened.
Met my mom, had me and my sister, and then obviously they had to find a home because I had children and all the rest of it. So that's the story, I would say, of probably 99.9% of the people who came from Caribbean in the late 40s and 50s. They're still in England. Some of them, after they retired, maybe in their 70s, they then sold up everything in the UK and shipped everything back to whichever islands they came from, Barbados, St. Lucia, Jamaica, wherever it might be. And then they bought beautiful palatial homes back in the islands that they had left in, mm-hmm, the 50s. And a lot of them that went back, they live extremely well. And they have beautiful houses, they ship their cars, and there's like a reciprocal agreement between Britain and the people of the islands that allow them to bring their cars back on more favourable rates. Their pensions are paid into Barbados bank accounts or the accounts of which other island they've gone back to. So, you know, it's like not a repatriation, but a form of, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because they lived most of their lives in the UK, when they go back to that island that they left when they were kind of 19, 20, it is like a foreign land. And a lot of them have found it quite difficult to reintegrate into that. And because they've built up that considerable wealth in England, then they're sometimes living at a much higher level than the indigenous people, and that can cause sometimes a bit of animosity.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them create their own groups. For example, in Barbados, you've got the Bar Brits. So Bar, short for Barbados, mm-hmm, and Brits, Brits. And it's for people of like mind who have spent 50, 60 years in the UK, mm-hmm, and understand the struggles that they all went through when they went to the United Kingdom. them. And they have get-togethers.
Well, what's the controversy then? What's kind of bad about the word
Windrush? Yeah. So back to the Windrush. So there was a big ship called the Empire Windrush that brought a lot of these people from the Caribbean over to the United UK. Kingdom. Mm-hmm. My mum didn't actually come on the Windrush, but there were other ships that were similar. So they call it the Windrush because that was the first boat that brought a lot of them over, And the controversy is that when Theresa May, the former Prime Minister to Boris Johnson, when she was Home Secretary, she was Home Secretary for about 5 or 6 years, quite a long time, we had a major problem with immigration into the United Kingdom.
From other places,
not necessarily from the Caribbean, but from all over the world. Mm-hmm. People just wanted to get into the United Kingdom, come what may. And Theresa May created what she called herself a hostile environment to said immigrants that were coming from all over the world that wanted a piece of Britain. And the controversy is that, for example, when my mum and dad came over to England from Barbados, they actually came on what was called a British colonial passport. So Barbados only gained its independence from Britain in 1966. So anybody coming before that, they had a British passport, but it was a colonial passport because it was a colony of Britain.
So it was not kind of like a real top-notch passport.
That's interesting. Top-notch as in like British full.
Yeah,
in a way. And what happened, because my mum wanted my sister and I to know our grandparents back in Barbados.
So you've gone back to Barbados since?
Oh, yeah, since I was like about 7. Traveling every couple of years. Uh-huh. So that's the only way that I would have known my grandparents.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So because of that, my mum had to upgrade to a proper British passport in order to be able to make those travels. However, there were a lot of people from the Caribbean, not just Barbados, other islands, that did not do that. They did not upgrade to full British passports because maybe they did not travel. I was very privileged. I was able to travel backwards and forwards quite a lot, but a lot of them didn't. They came to England and they were just so busy just trying to keep their heads above water financially, bring up their children, school them and get houses to live, because at that time there were banners saying no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. So people from the Caribbean, even though they were invited over, they weren't allowed to live anywhere. they were, because whenever they went to rent somewhere, there were all these placards saying no blacks, no dogs, not Irish.
They actually said that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so they found it very difficult to get accommodation. So they used to live like a lot of families in one room. But I'm going back to the controversy now before I get there. So what basically happened is that those who did not upgrade their passports, they lived in England for like 50, 40, 50, 60 years. Come Theresa May's hostile environment now, they had not naturalised themselves as naturalised British citizens. They didn't feel they had to because they had come over on those British colonial passports. So now, because of the hostile environment, they got caught up with all of these other immigrants that had just come to the country, and they'd been here for 50-60 years. But because they couldn't prove that they were British citizens, they were then denied work, denied cancer treatment, denied employment, denied all sorts of things, even though they had paid into the system for years and years and years and years. So that's one of the biggest scandals that Britain has ever seen.
And what years was that it was really hot as a scandal?
About 2-3 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
It's recent.
That's the thing, is that I hear the word Windrush
as
a relatively recent.
About 2 years. Years ago.
And how did it affect you? How did it affect you?
It didn't affect me at all. Mm-hmm. It did not affect me at all. Well, number one, I was born in Britain, so it didn't affect me. It didn't affect my mum, my parents, because they went through the proper processes because we were travelling. But some of those people that came, they never travelled back to their islands, so they never upgraded their passports. They didn't see a need to. And what was happening then, you would get people from these islands that were being told by the British government, you are not legal here. You need to go back to Jamaica, Grenada, St. Lucia, or whatever island it was.
They were deporting people?
They had got as far as actually did. Some people fell through the net and got caught up and got deported.
Oh.
It was, as I said, Vic, it was one of the biggest scandals ever to hit the United Kingdom.
And that's what the spillover, we got just the tip of the iceberg, so
yes,
to speak.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And we heard Windrush, and then when you wrote to me and kind of gave me your bio, said you were part of this Windrush thing,
yeah.
I wanted to hear about it and get the facts.
That's right, uh-huh. And that's basically the story of it. Yeah.
Now, Denise, you're one of our newer members, you know, of the United Church of God.
2012, yes.
Well, to us, that's very new. Tell us about how you came into the church. And what attracted you? Because when I talk to you, you work at the British office.
I do. I've been there since 2014.
Right.
That's right, the summer,
yeah.
What actually happened? This is it. Now, I was brought up as a Catholic. I'd gone to an all-girls Catholic school from the age of 6 to when I left at 18. And so in Catholicism, and I remember my school days, although it was a Christian environment, I never actually once remember being given a Bible to open or reading it. We just had a little book called the Four Gospels, mm-hmm. and basically that's what we did all of our religion from. That was it. However, I don't know where it came from, but it's like I kind of knew that the Sabbath was right, but I'm not even sure why. So I was going through, or when I left school, I immediately left Catholicism behind, but I was about... But because I was brought up in a Christian background, I felt there was really something missing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just basically joined the normal sort of evangelical, average British Christian church, mm-hmm. Sunday mm-hmm. church. And then, but what I found myself doing was come Easter and Christmas, I would literally disappear for a few weeks because I didn't want all the run up to it. I didn't want the after, oh, what'd you get for Christmas? I just didn't want to know.
Yeah.
And then I'd come back in, oh, we haven't seen you for a while, you know. But I thought, you know what, this can't go on forever. And to cut a very long story short, I left the church that I was in and I said, I'm actually not going to go anywhere at all because I didn't feel comfortable in any of them because I knew when they stood up what was being taught wasn't true. And I literally, everybody asked me, how did you come to the church? And I literally sat at my laptop and I Googled non-Easter keeping, non-Christmas keeping, Sabbath keeping church, and the United Church of God came up.
Hooray that for
is,
Google.
Yes, literally, that is literally how I'm sitting uh-huh. here in your podcast, Vic. Uh-huh. And then it said, like, put in your area. So I put in Redbourne, which is not far from Brickett Wood, which is mm-hmm. my congregation in the United Kingdom. And I looked and I thought, oh, they've got a congregation in Brickett Wood. That's just like down the road from where I live. And then I saw Gerhard's name. I called him.
Gerhard Marx.
Yes, he was our pastor in Brickett Wood for many, many years, stalwart of the church and everything. And I came over. I came to Brickett Wood. I sat down. I listened, and I just kind of knew what I was hearing was true.
Then, how did you start working at the British Isles office?
So that's another interesting story. Now, when Mr. Schroeder, John Schroeder, was around, he was the one that dealt with all of our writing. Basically, mm-hmm. he wrote loads of brilliant books, and he was the one who edited our British supplement because we have a British supplement alongside the main BT magazine. And I used to read it, and I've always had an interest in editing and media and writing. So I just said, you know, was there a need for any help with a magazine or anything like that? And then it kind of started from there. And I started the way everybody starts at our head office in Chalfont St. Giles. One day a week, started with the photocopying. And then it literally progressed from there. And mm-hmm. 5 years on, I'm still there. Uh-huh. But doing a lot more than photocopying now.
Well, the thing that I found interesting in your bio was the fact that you've actually been on television,
yeah,
or the radio?
I have in Barbados. I was the main anchor there.
You were, well,
on
tell
television.
Us, well, tell us about that.
Yeah, I was actually recruited to, when I first went to Barbados, I did a journalism course in the UK and I got an opportunity to work in the newspaper, the main newspaper over there. And then a position came up for new faces for the Barbados TV channel. And I was interviewed and I got the job. So I was the main anchor there for a couple of years, on the nightly news and the lunchtime news. And I used to do a lot of editing there of my scripts, because obviously it's not CNN. But I got to meet Wolf Blitzer, who was one of your I met him because he came over to Barbados and I interviewed him. And so I've had a really interesting. It's not something I talk about and people don't know about.
Well, I want to know about it. I think our listeners would like to hear about this part of your life.
Yeah, in the early 90s, that's 94 to 97, and then I came back home. But President Clinton visited Barbados. Wolf Blitzer was covering it. I interviewed Wolf Blitzer for the Barbados TV side of things, and that was fantastic. I used to work on CNN World Report from the Caribbean side of things. So yeah, I love the editing part. And I realized even when I was doing my journalism course that there we had our own sort of in-house magazine, and I noticed the areas which I loved, and we all had to take turns of doing production or editing or writing, and I realized where my love really was with the writing and the editing, especially the editing, because when the magazine or people put their copy in, I would just like rip it apart. And I thought, I really love this. So that's how I got to be working more on the supplement, arbitrary supplement.
Yeah, we were so sorry when we lost John Rush Schroeder.
Yes, it was a big loss.
And we're wondering, well, who can fill that spot? And so we're happy that God has provided people with a background like yours to help out.
It's a real collaborative effort, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all hands on deck, but Jan just liked me to have a look at it before. kind of goes out.
Well, we enjoy getting it. You know, we get it by post, you know, every 2 months.
And that's
now
right.
I know who's kind of behind it, who's one of the people behind that. So what about coming here for the Leadership Weekend? How did that come about?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm still reeling from the whole thing. And I can't even believe I'm sitting at this table with a black tablecloth with you opposite me that I'm even here. That literally came about one day I was in the office, and David Fenney, who is our chief executive of the British Isles, he called myself and my colleague Hazel. He said, "Oh, I need to speak to you and Hazel." I thought, "What have I done?" So, I said, "I'll speak to you firstly." So he called me into the office, and this is literally how it happened. He said, "How do you fancy going to Cincinnati?" And I just said, "What?" So I just looked at him like, you know, you're hearing things, but you're not like quite thinking, did I just hear what he said? Because it was always something that I would have loved to have done, just because of my background in the media. I was so interested in your studios and just the presentations of the three guys on Beyond Today. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be lovely to be able to see those new studios and maybe just see the home office? But I never ever thought it would happen, because I'm not a pastor's wife or anything like that. So I never ever, it was something in the back of my mind, but I never ever dreamt. So when he said it, I thought, did he just ask me if I wanted to go to the Leadership? So yeah, and that's literally how it came about. Yeah, that was back in May.
What about the Leadership Weekend? How was it?
Oh, do you know what, Vic? I don't even really know how to start. To me, it's still really surreal. And just to see names like, you come into the Home Office and you see Steve Meyer's name, Darius, and yours, and Richard. I mean, I met Richard before at a feast, but I work very close
with
Richard Kennebec, because he deals with all the IT. So when our system goes down, when I do the import, which is basically importing all of the quests from the American server, and I deal with all of that, whenever everything goes wrong, I work really closely with Richard. So it was just so interesting to even be at the great man's desk. Just look, and I said, when you take over our computer, Richard, which is the screen that you take over our computer, is this? I took a picture of it, sent it back to Jan, and it's just like being here from things that seem so far away and just being part of it. There's a leadership. There are a lot of things I'll take away with me, but one of the main things was about the discipleship and how you've literally turned that word around into leadership, but in a serving way and not you're the kind of big I am and I'm the leader. It's a complete reversal, and it's a wonderful way of looking, because it ensures that everybody, if they understand what true leadership is, remains humble, and humility is such an important part of leading, and not thinking you're bigger or better because of titles and all of this.
And being a true disciple, yes, first and foremost.
First, and that is one of the main things that I would take. There are lots of other things, but that's one of the main things.
Yeah, so things that were brought up in the leadership lectures were helpful to continue life in the local churches.
Yes, yes. There are certain things I'd like to take away with me, even the way some things are done in even my local congregation, you know. But you have to look at things and see and talk to people, pastors, to see how you can implement some of the things that I've learned here.
You attend the Brick and Wood congregation.
I do. That's my congregation, yes.
I lived in Brickenwood for a year and a half, and I went to Ambassador College.
Yes.
And so when I talk to people from those areas, I still feel a sense of tugging to those areas.
Yes, I bet you do.
Is it still that building by the old school?
It is still there. Uh-huh. A lot of it is now being built into homes and that kind of thing. Some of the grave sites are still there, though, of brethren that used to...
I remember some of the funerals. That was back in my time.
Yes, yeah. Some of the grave sites are still... You can still make them out who they are. Yeah.
Denise, it's been wonderful talking to you today.
Do you know what, Vic? It's been so wonderful. And I was so frightened when you said, we're going to do a podcast. I said, no way. And I thought, and I did not think I'd be able to fill the time, but look at me now.
Just push the button and Denise makes the podcast.
Do you know what? I'm so grateful for you and thankful that you've invited me to. I feel honored to have even been asked to do the podcast. So thank you so much.
Well, Denise, it's been wonderful having you here.
Thank you so
much. Denise McLean. McLean, and very, very happy to talk to you, very happy to hear about your background and your work with the British office and all the wonderful things that you contribute to the church.
It's been a wonderful experience, far more wonderful than I ever thought it could be, so thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us on Inside United. Go to our homepage at ucg.org, and you can find us easily by clicking or tapping on the podcast button. Also, feel free to write to us at podcast@ucg.org, and give us your impressions of this podcast. We would like to hear from you. So thank you for joining us. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.